All right, welcome to another episode, another podcast for Peak Performance Institute. This is the Passionpreneur Ryan C. Green, and I am excited about this episode because we are here with none other than Deborah Gray Young. And Deborah Gray Young is going to talk to us today about the Women of Color Leadership Network. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited because, I was thinking about it today on the way in, talking about, you know, women have, you get to have those niches. You can say, hey, we can have a women's conversation. And men can't. And I was like, men don't have it. You can't have a men's network. And I said, like, you know what? Men have had it all our lives, you know. So,
it's called sports.
That's right. It's called everything, business, everything. You know, women have had to fight for their rights to be able to get their thing. So I'm excited about this because I want to hear what you have to say. And I want us to help some women, not just help the women, but I want the men to be able to hear from a female perspective so they can do better as well. You know, when we're talking about dealing with the issues that women have to deal with. So let's jump into it, because today we're going to talk about your new brand. We're going to talk about your new mission that you're on. It's three steps to take control of your brand, career, and life. Let's just start right there. What brought you to that purpose, that mission? Why are we working with that today?
So thank you for that question. So what brought me to that is that over the course of my career, I have not only experienced but just observed a number of things, right? And so particularly as it pertains to women of color. And some of those things include for us not having been on the receiving end of the right kind of leadership training or the right kind of training to help us better understand who we are, better understand that we have a brand. You know, we have a personal brand as well as a professional brand, and how to even develop that brand and then manage it. And over the course of time, what I started to notice was that when we're not consciously aware of our impact and presence in the world, we don't always take advantage of all of the opportunities that might be present for us. And so it where I am now is not some place that I arrived sort of overnight, right? It's really been, today is sort of a culmination of 35 plus years as a professional in the advertising and marketing arena. And so, but I'm also a student, right? Mm-hmm, so not just being an expert in what I do, but always looking to study and learn from observation so that I can continuously add to my own skills. And so that's how I arrived at that, and working specifically with women of color, because that's the group that I see as being the least supported, if you will, right? The least supported. Brand, career, and life. Life is sort of obviously the culmination of brand and career, right? So 1 + 1 = 10.
Right.
Right. And so being able to be consciously aware of the dynamics that make up those three aspects so that we can have more control over the trajectory of our careers and our lives.
What are some of the biggest obstacles, maybe the stumbling blocks that you see women of color have to face that maybe others aren't facing, or they don't have those obstacles in front of them?
Yeah, so that's a good question as well. So here's the thing that I noticed, that's really just sort of cultural and culturally unique to women of color, particularly African-American women, and that is we don't like to ask for help, right? So we can be struggling with something, and we will talk to our girlfriends about it. We'll talk to our aunties about it. We will pray all day and night, but we won't go ask for help or articulate articulate to someone what our needs are. And this is particularly true in the corporate world, right? And so we find ourselves in these situations where we can't figure it out. So we get to a point and we can't figure it out. And we don't necessarily give up because that's not in our DNA, but we'll bolt. We'll just exit, mm-hmm. right? And the other thing is that the other roadblock, if you will, or obstacle that I see is, and I see this often, is that we don't always have the right support system or relationships. When I say relationships, I'm talking now specifically within the corporate arena. We don't have relationships with key stakeholders and with the people who influence our career trajectory. And part of that, Ryan, has to do with, as a rule, we don't like organizational politics. You know, we will avoid organizational politics at all costs. But the truth of the matter is that we need to be involved in the politics. However, there is a way to be politically aware in terms of corporate politics or organizational politics and do it on your own terms. And that's a skill that can be acquired. And that's really where I focus.
And we're gonna get some of those secrets that you have on how to become more corporately politically savvy. But you know, some things you said stuck out to me. And I kind of want to ask you. You know, you said that women won't ask for help, mm-hmm. And they struggle to play the organizational politics game or build those relationships. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's something that is just innate in mm-hmm. women of color, or is it the way things are set up? I'm thinking, you know, we've always been told we've got to be better, stronger, faster. So is asking for help seen as a weakness, or what do you think it is?
So it's a couple of things. So part of it is cultural, right? And particularly for women, because so much is placed on us, right? Mm-hmm. So we're the backbone of the community, you know, the backbone of the family. I mean, so much is placed on us in terms of responsibility. So in some sense, asking for help, it can be interpreted as a sign of weakness, right? Of course, it's not, but in some cases it can be. The other thing is that, particularly within corporate America, we don't have an expectation of fairness, and so we won't ask for help because we don't have an expectation that that we're going to be heard and heard fairly. And then fair action be taken to help remedy the situation wow. that we find ourselves in. So it's twofold, right? And that's a huge part of it.
Wow. I want to get into one of your mantras, your sayings or quotes, and you say hope is not a strategy. Talk to us about that, because when I heard that, I was taking notes and I heard you talking. I perked up when I heard that. You know, talk to us about that, because so many people, you know, we hope and right. we pray.
Yep. Hope and pray all day long. Right. So one of the things that I have come across a lot in the course of my work as an executive coach with professional women of color is that women, again, will find themselves in situations where they're doing excellent work. They work really hard, as you pointed out. Really, take on the mission of the company, but they don't have those key relationships that will help get them the kind of exposure that they need. And so what happens is they kind of keep their head down and work really hard and hope that their hard work will be acknowledged and that they'll get rewarded, that they'll get the promotion because they've worked really hard and they've been really good at what they do. Mm-hmm. Well, you and I both know that doesn't always work. And so one of the things I always say to my clients is when I hear these stories, and believe me, I've heard this story dozens and dozens of times. I mean, this has lots of iterations, right?
Right, yeah.
Is that hope is not a strategy. You must take some action. And now, because in general, people have such an aversion to the organizational politics, taking action is just something that, you know, they don't even want to do. And so what I work with people on is identifying, you know, sort of what the roadmap is to where they want to go, and helping them develop what I call a PSAP, right? So a personal strategic action plan.
I like that.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, keeping your head down and doing the work and doing it well and working hard, and as you pointed out, you know, for at least for my generation, you know, we've all been taught that you have to be twice as good as anybody else just to get in the door.
Mm-hmm, right.
So we know we're not there just because we're cute. We're there because we're qualified,
right?
But that's not enough. So hoping that you get recognized and rewarded is not nearly enough. So hope is not a strategy. Right.
And we know, unfortunately, you know, the way it's set up in corporate America, a man goes and asks for what he wants, and he's seen as a leader.
Right.
A woman goes and asks for what she wants, and she's seen as the B word.
Right.
You know,
right.
So you have that double standard.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
We want to jump into some of the things you talk about, how to be politically savvy. Now, we're not going to give them everything, but we'll give them a couple of tips. We want to make sure we're giving some people some good information and some things that can hopefully help them today. And you have the five steps to becoming politically savvy, and we're talking about corporate politics here, right?
Yep.
So the first thing you talk about is get clear and know what you want to achieve.
Right. So that's the very, very first thing when you, and this may even change over time, but you absolutely must have some sense of where it is that you want to go in the corporation. So let's say you are currently working in, in HR.
Okay.
Right. And so, but eventually you want to be the head of operations.
Mm-hmm.
Or if, let's say you work in accounting right now, and what you ideally would like to do down the road is be the CFO, be the chief financial officer. So you must have some sense of where it is that you want to go. That's very, very important, because everything else will fall out of that. It depends on that.
Correct. All right, now, so when you figure this out, I'm just making sure I'm not getting ahead of myself here. Right, so you go in there with the goal saying, this is day one, I'm the staff accountant, but I want to be the CFO. Am I walking in the door telling people that?
No, so you're not walking in the door telling people that, because you'll probably scare them half to death.
Right.
But what you want to know is, what is the role and the function within that organization, right? Mm-hmm. And who the person is. And so there's a distinction here. So the people, the role, and the function. And the reason you want to know that is you want to know who the person is, because you want to get some sense of who they are and how they got there. What's their background? What school did they go to? What are they interested in? Those kinds of things. And we'll come back to that in a minute, because that'll be key to how you develop some other things. The role... What's the role of the CFO office, right? The chief financial officer. Mm-hmm. And so, and the reason you want to know that, and we make the distinction, is because if you looked at the org chart, the CFO position is permanent, right? Mm-hmm. That's part of the organizational chart.
Right.
Right. So that for the most part, doesn't go anywhere. So the people might change.
Right, but that's going to be
right,
there.
But that's going to be there. So you need to understand the function of that position, right? And then what is the role? So what underneath that function, what is the CFO responsible for? In some companies, it might be responsible for more than accounting. It might be IT. It might be IP, you know, mm-hmm. intellectual property. I mean, any number of things. So for your particular organization, you need to understand those three things: the person, the role, and the function. Person being, of course, you know, changed all the time. But the office, the function, stays there for the most part.
Right.
And the other thing you want to know is what influence over your particular career path does that office have? So, for instance, if you're the accountant, you're the staff accountant, mm-hmm. you're just starting out, and that's where you want to be ultimately, who else do you need to know or should know, mm-hmm. right, that has some influence over your career trajectory within that organization?
Right. And that goes into number two, because that was number two. Identify the people you need to know, but
mm-hmm.
don't. And I want to bring it to this, because you people go to work, and a lot of people, I think they go with the wrong game plan. They go because they want to get a check. I don't need to be friends with my coworkers. I don't need to really get to know anybody. This is who I am. They're going to like me or not and deal with it. But that might work to get you paid week to week, but is that really the best game plan when you're trying to, you have a career path that you're trying to achieve?
So you're exactly right. So if you have a career path, that is exactly the game plan you don't want to
right,
implement.
Right, okay. Right, okay.
That is definitely the game plan if you're just in it for a check.
Right.
And by the way, if you're just in it for a check, that shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it comes through in everything that you do, how you present yourself, how you do your job, whether you stay current on your marketplace, you know, those kinds of things, that shows up. And eventually, if you're just showing up for a check, eventually you will not be promotable.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody, for the most part, in any organization, if you're not promotable, eventually you're going to find yourself separated from the company, because it doesn't do the company any good either to have people in the ranks that are not promotable.
Going to stay there forever.
Yes, right. Exactly.
All right, one more of the steps, because we want to, like I said, we're not going to give everything away. This is just to give people an introduction. But the number three was know your communication style. So talk to us about the communication styles, and especially being a woman of color, where, you know, there might be preconceived notion, maybe prejudice that are already there. And I don't mean racial. I just mean prejudice against how people, this how someone like this supposed to act. So talk to us about maybe some tips on how to overcome that, or how you find your communication voice in the corporate world.
So one of the things where this particular point comes from is in my work with professional women of color. One of the stories I was hearing a lot, and it's another one of those stories that has a lot of versions to it, right, because it happens so often, is that, you know, someone would be told, you do excellent work, but, right? And so I've done a whole series on what do they really mean when they say, you know, you've done excellent work, but. And so sometimes it's been leadership style, or not being politically savvy, or it's been communication style. And one of the key things that you need to know, but you might not always be aware of, is what is your dominant communication style. And so why is that important? Because it's important to know how you are being received, right? It's important to know whether or not you are being heard. And so a lot of the pushback that myself as a coach will get is, well, you know, I'm not changing for anybody. It's something that you just mentioned before. This is just who I am, and this is how I'm going to be, and they can take it or leave it. But adjusting your communication style doesn't make you inauthentic. So you wouldn't talk to a grown man like you would to a five-year-old boy.
You better not. Not right. At work, especially.
Right. You know, right. So, I mean, you change your communication style right. Based on the situation. And so it's really important to understand what your communication style is. And if you're in a leadership position, you know, a manager or a supervisor, it's also important to understand the dominant communication style of the people that you interact with the most. Mm-hmm. So if you're a direct communicator, like I'm a direct communicator. Everybody knows Deborah. Straight, no chaser.
Right, right.
You know. But I'm all, because I'm aware of that, I also know that when I am speaking to someone who is an indirect communicator, that I have to frame up what I'm saying differently. Doesn't make it inauthentic. Doesn't mean I'm hiding, you know, anything. I just know that if you're an indirect communicator, I have to frame up what I'm saying to you differently, because at the end of the day, it's more important that I be heard than then it has to only be a certain way,
right,
that I only
right.
deliver it a certain way. And why is that important in a corporate setting is because so much of who you are and so much of your brand is attached to how you show up and how you communicate people. And so it seems like a small thing. But it really could be pivotal.
Yeah, that is so huge, because, again, so often people get caught up on themselves and like, well, I said it, you know, and this is it. But you want, like you said, you want to make sure that you're heard and you're understood. And once people can really grasp what you're saying, understand it, then you get the buy-in. Then you get them ready to roll with
right.
you
exactly.
as opposed to, you know, when you can. my old pastor used to talk about how when pastors preach, they say the same thing three different times. They'll say it on the PhD level. They'll say it on the middle class level. Then they'll break it down to the hood level so that everybody can get the same thing, but it's three different ways. Because you have different audiences. So and people can, they'll grab that. They'll know when someone's really trying to reach them versus just talk to them. So
and I might add that I learned that the hard way, by the way. So, you know, I used to be one of those people that would say, you're more focused on how I said it rather than what I said, right? Because to me, what I said was the most important. Mm-hmm. And I started to begin to understand that how I say things also is important.
Absolutely.
And so that makes you an effective communicator and helps you to be a more effective leader.
Absolutely. Now, I want to get into we only have time for one of them, but you have three steps to take control of your brand, career, and your life. The number, like you said, the career and your brand, that kind of goes, that 1+1, which goes into creating your life. But the first part we have here is creating a brand that's consistent with your purpose. So I'm going to give you a couple of minutes. Go ahead and expound on that and talk about why it's so important that if you're out here, you're building that brand consistent with.
Right. So when we say brand, so when you think about brands, you think about, you know, the brand of headphones we're wearing, you know, the brand of sneakers, you know, and things like that. But when I talk about brand, almost anybody, when you talk about your personal brand and even your professional brand, it's really about how are you showing up, right? And how is it that you want to show up? So when people see you, you know, what is it that comes to mind? And by the way, it has less to do with how you look, right? It has more to do with the energy you bring to what you do. So your brand is, and your image is more than just how you look. And it really is about your attitude. You know, that whole thing about people feel you before you, before you even enter the room.
Right.
So all of that is based on science. And you know, it sounds cute. And like, and even now when kids say, I feel you. Well, what they feel is the energy that you're giving. You're giving it off all of the time. And so being conscious and intentional about your brand and who you are and how you're showing up. And that's very much tied to your core values. So what core values is your life based on? Right. And some people would like to believe that you have, you know, values over here in your professional life, and then you have values over here in your personal life. You either have integrity or you don't.
Right, exactly.
Right? You know, so you can't, there's no such thing as having integrity in your professional life and none in your personal life, or vice versa. You're either a person of integrity or not. Yeah, you either believe in fairness or you don't.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
And so, you know, what are those core values that make up who you are, that you live by and stand on every single day? So that's the starting point for all of it. How are you showing up? And if you're not showing up the way you want to show up, then how is it that you want to show up, and then work with somebody to help you map out the steps to get you where you say you want to go?
Excellent. And you've authored a couple of books, or is it?
Yeah, a couple of books.
Go ahead and give out your book titles while we're here.
Well, so one I'm in the process of rebranding. It's called Hope Is Not a Strategy.
I love it.
Imagine that, right? And it's 25 action lessons for taking control of your brand, your career, and your life. And it really is, and it's for professional women of color. And it's really designed to help women of color not be complicit, if you will, in the challenges that they face. So my intent with the book is for all of the challenges that women of color are facing, let's just make sure we're doing our part to not contribute to them, you know. So one of the chapters talks about one of the chapters is called Who's Holding Your Ladder? And that goes back to, you know, what's your support system look like? You know, because if it's just all friends and people that you like, then that might not be as might not serve you as well as making sure is that you've got a truth teller in there somewhere. You know, one of the chapters is where did you get those shoes? And and it talks about whether your personal style is a professional distraction.
All right. So you letting them know. Yeah. You letting them know. Yeah. You're saying the things that people don't really want to hear, but they know they need to listen to.
People don't really want to hear, but right. they need to know, because it's all about being more conscious of the choices that you make, so that, again, that you're not complicit in your own challenges, right?
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. We are all out of time for this episode. You've been listening to Deborah Gray Young of the Women of Color Leadership Network. It's been an awesome experience. For more information and to join her cause and to really start growing yourself, go to www.womenofcolorleadershipnetwork.com. That's www.womenofcolorleadershipnetwork.com. I want to thank you. This is Ryan Green. Talk to you real soon.